NormalCon 2008. It's Normal's 37th annual national conference, Friday, October 17th through Sunday, October 19th, at the DoubleTree Hotel and Executive Meeting Center, Berkeley Marina, in Berkeley, California. Register now for the conference. Early registrations get special discount pricing. Don't delay. We have negotiated a special rate for rooms that are sure to sell out fast. The theme of the convention is It's Not Your Parents' Prohibition. Over the first 2 days, you'll learn more than you thought you could know about marijuana law reform in our plenary and breakout sessions, which include how the media lie about cannabis, growing up and raising children in the age of legal medical pot, and politics, 2008, pot culture, the politics of marijuana and health,
war on pot is a war on young people,
what if we arrested 20 million Americans and nobody noticed?
Featuring the top experts in marijuana law reform from Normal and other cannabis-centered organizations. On Sunday, Oaksterdam University presents a look at California's medical marijuana dispensary businesses.
But it's not all work and no play. NormalCon 2008 also presents social gatherings and entertainment in the evenings so activists and attendees can network. It's 3 days of the best marijuana conference in the world with the largest, most popular marijuana organization in the world. Join us October 17th through 19th for the Normal National Conference in Berkeley, California. Sign up online today at norml.org. It's Monday, September 15th, 2008, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Hey everybody, welcome to the Stash. Glad to have you here. Today, of course, is a big day in the cannabis community because it's the release of the 2007 FBI Uniform Crime Report. We'll be talking about that in our hemp headlines. Plus, we'll be talking with Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal, to crunch the numbers and tell us what it means for those of us who like to smoke weed. Also coming up in the Stash, I've unpacked a couple of my speeches from this year's Seattle Hemp Fest, so enjoy those talks from the stages in Seattle. And of course, it's Blues Monday, so our musical break will feature one of the finest bluesmen around, as discovered by our own Cannabis Carrie. It's going to be a long week, and we got plenty of numbers to crunch, so grab a good sativa strain and sit back and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. ...872,721 marijuana arrests in 2007, up 5.2% from 2006, a record number of Americans arrested for marijuana. The FBI has released its annual report on crime in the United States for 2007. Once again, the number of people in the United States arrested for marijuana has gone up. 872,721 Americans were arrested for marijuana in 2007, and of those arrests, 89%, or 775,138, were arrests for simple possession, not buying, selling, trafficking, or growing. This represents an increase in marijuana arrests of 5.2% from the previous year, and the fifth straight year marijuana arrests have increased from the previous year. Now, a marijuana smoker is arrested at the rate of 1 every 37 seconds, and almost 100 marijuana arrests per hour. More arrests for marijuana are for simple possession than for any other drug. While only 11% of marijuana arrests involve buying, selling, trafficking, or manufacture, that rate for heroin and cocaine is 27%, and that rate for synthetic drugs is 31%. While the arrests for marijuana sales and manufacturing increased by 7.6%, heroin and cocaine sales arrests dropped by 3.8%, and synthetic drug sales arrests dropped by 2.6%. Similarly, marijuana possession rose by 4.9%, while heroin and cocaine dropped by 8% and synthetic drugs dropped by 5.4%. Overall, while the arrests for marijuana increased by 5.2%, arrests for all other drugs combined dropped from just over a million to just under 900,000, a decline of 8.7%. Last year, marijuana arrests made up 43.9% of all drug arrests. This year, marijuana accounts for 47% of all drug arrests. Almost half of the war on drugs is waged on marijuana. The FBI breaks their data down into four regions: Northeast, Midwest, South, and West. Arrests for marijuana make up more than half of all drug arrests in two out of four regions, and almost half in a third. In the West, marijuana arrests only make up a little more than one-third of the drug arrest total at 34.3%. Accounting for the population of these regions, marijuana users in the South are most at risk, where there are 318 marijuana possession arrests for every 100,000 Southerners. Midwesterners face a 292 to 100,000 ratio. In the Northeast, it is 225 to 100,000, and only 201 per 100,000 Westerners are arrested for marijuana possession. Perhaps most disturbing is comparing marijuana arrests to violent crime. This year, while over 775,000 Americans were arrested for mere marijuana possession, only 597,000 people were arrested for all violent crimes combined, which includes murder, non-negligent manslaughter, forcible rape, robbery, and aggravated assault. While the percentage of marijuana possession arrests rose by 5.2%, arrests for violent crime dropped by 2.3% from the previous year. Now, to be fair, the reported incidence of violent crime did show a slight decrease of 0.7%, but that's only a decrease of 9,000 offenses compared to a decrease of 14,000 arrests for those offenses. Over the past 5 years, there have been more arrests every year for marijuana possession than for all violent crime combined. Over those 5 years, murders have increased 2.3% and robberies have increased 7.5%. Overall, there were 24,000 more violent crimes in 2007 than 2003, yet there were only 421 more arrests for violent crime in 2007 compared to 2003. This year, there were only 424 arrests per every 1,000 violent crimes, which is 7 to 10 fewer arrests per 1,000 than each of the previous 4 years. Over the past 10 years, arrests for just about every crime have declined. Arrests for all violent crimes have dropped 8.9%, and property crime arrests have dropped 12.5%. Many other miscellaneous crime arrests have seen double-digit percentage declines, like fraud, prostitution, and offenses against family and children. Meanwhile, in that 10 years, the only crimes for which arrests have gone up are robbery, drug law violations, and embezzlement. So you really just have to ask yourself, are we making a smart investment of our law enforcement time and money by busting responsible adult marijuana smokers? Neighbors' complaint and Fox News story lead to medical marijuana garden thefts. Last Tuesday, I posted a story called "Dispute Grows Over Medical Marijuana Plants," in which a legal medical marijuana-using cancer patient received complaints about her outdoor garden from her neighbor, Mr. Jack Lennon of Vancouver, Washington. The Vancouver police checked out Mr. Lennon's allegations that she was growing, quote, a lot more than 60 days worth of medicine, as per Washington State's medical marijuana law, and that they were, quote, the biggest plants I've ever seen, end quote. The police found her outdoor grow to be completely within the law. However, Jack Lemmon's complaint also led to a news story on the local Fox affiliate, KPTV 12 in Portland. The news story mentioned the name of the street on which Jack Lemmon and the cancer patient reside and filmed the story with the cancer patient's home featured prominently throughout the report. Friends and family and the patient herself, self-identified as Tracy, have followed up on my initial post with updates in our comments section. According to Tracy, "I am not sure why Jack decided to take this action. I have in the past given him Blazer tickets, a cell phone, and my husband sold him his first car. We have always been close to Jack, his brother, and mother. Why Jack all of a sudden became an expert without asking me first is beyond me. Jack has now been informed that there is no illegal activity taking place on my property, and that if he or anyone else on my block bother me, the Vancouver Police Department will cite them for harassment. Again, thank you to all those who care. I am starting to feel better. Good day today. Have another round of chemo on Thursday, so keep me in your prayers." Unfortunately, thanks to the media attention by KPTV Fox News 12 and Jack Lemmon of Vancouver, Washington, this cancer patient named Tracy now lives in a house that the entire Portland metro area knows has a cannabis grow site in the backyard. Sunday night, a family friend writes, "Unfortunately, the lady grower's home was robbed yesterday morning, sometime between the hours of 3:30 a.m. and 7 a.m. There had been no problem since May until the news story. Security has been beefed up. However, one of Jack's friends, confirmed with Jack's mother, posted the lady's name and address on another site with the comment, quote, 'Looking for a new drug dealer?' End quote. Almost half the plants were stolen, but I am guessing not by a medical patient. And it had to be by someone who our three dogs know." Then, on early Monday morning, we received another update. "The house was robbed again by high schoolers, but one was caught and taken by Vancouver Police Department. He was caught by the added security and told us he heard about the marijuana from the Fox Channel 12 news story with Jim Hyde." So thanks in no small part to Jack Lemmon of Vancouver, Washington, not being man enough to privately address his concerns about a secret outdoor marijuana garden with his frail, cancer-stricken female neighbor, she now gets to scramble to find medicine so she won't vomit uncontrollably from her next chemo treatment. Thanks to KPTV Fox News 12 and their lack of concern for the medical privacy of a cancer patient, residents of a peaceful Vancouver neighborhood must now worry about late-night thieves prowling around their backyards and alleyways. Jack Lemmon of Vancouver, Washington, the late, great John Lennon wrote lyrics for people like you. Now, we here at The Stash, unlike Jack Lemmon of Vancouver, Washington, will not post Jack Lennon's address and strongly discourage any harassment of Mr. Lemmon. We believe in minding our own business and letting people be, even inconsiderate cowards who run to the police rather than talking to cancer-suffering neighbors. However, KPTV Fox 12 in Portland is a news media organization that should know better. You may address your complaints to KPTV Fox 12, News Director Station Manager Patrick McCreary, 14975 Northwest Greenbrier Parkway, Beaverton, Oregon, 97006-5731. The phone number for KPTV Fox 12 is 503-906-1249, and their fax number is 503-548-6920. Drug Czar Walters says, "People in prison for marijuana are like unicorns." Well, my hat's off for a big hat tip to Dan and Aaron out at the MPP blog, who asked two questions of Drug Czar John Walters at his press conference last week for the release of the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. Visit our blog at stash.normal.org and click the link to check out the videos. They're only about 3.5 minutes each, and watching Walters rhetorically slither around, over, and past MPP's questions is watching political doublespeak spin at its finest. I just had to bring you a couple of gems from the Drug Czar. We just announced that over 872,000 Americans were arrested for marijuana in 2007, and of those arrests, 89% or 775,000 were arrests for simple possession, and this is according to the FBI's Uniform Crime Report for 2007. Well, according to John Walters, after all these arrests, over 5 million during the Bush administration, nobody goes to jail for simple possession. He says first-time nonviolent offenders in prison for possession of marijuana are like unicorns.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that. But finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist.
After all, according to John Walters, we didn't arrest 800,000 people for marijuana last year.
We didn't arrest 800,000 marijuana users. That's the same lie I just talked to your colleague back there about. We arrest people because they are usually involved with violent offenses, and they're involved with things like driving while intoxicated, because they have, and if it's an issue of possession, I would ask anybody here, we have a booklet if you want to see it, because this idiocy is repeated so often.
Walters wants you to think all the people arrested for marijuana were A, pleading their case down from a larger cultivation or trafficking charge, B, involved in some other sort of violent crime, or C, involved in a driving while intoxicated charge. A, if they're pleading down charges, you sure are letting a whole lot of growers and traffickers avoid serious jail time. Thanks, I guess. So how is it that you're so lenient on the marijuana growers and sellers, 11% of all marijuana arrests, but so tough on the heroin and cocaine traffickers, 27% of all heroin and cocaine arrests, and the meth and ecstasy labs, which are 31% of all the meth and ecstasy arrests? You might lead people to believe that you don't think marijuana is as bad as those other drugs, don't you think? B, if you're arresting them for violent crimes and then tacking on the marijuana charges, how is it your violent crime arrests have remained steady or declined while marijuana charges have increased? And how is it that you have fewer violent crime arrests than marijuana arrests? C, if these are all DUI related, how is it that DUI arrests have dropped 1.8% in the past 10 years while marijuana arrests have increased by 28% over the same period of time? I know. There must have been a huge increase in the number of drunk driving, gun-toting, pot-growing unicorns over the past 10 years.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
U.S. Drug Czar John Walters doesn't believe anybody is in jail for marijuana possession.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn.
With the loveliest of them all was the unicorn.
Are you one of the Drug Czar's unicorns? Did you serve time for a first-time nonviolent marijuana possession charge? Tell us your story, and you could win big.
The loveliest of all was the unicorn.
You can remain anonymous, and if we use your story on the podcast, you'll win a copy of the DVD Totally Baked, autographed by AC/DC's lead singer Brian Johnson, as well as excellent Normal swag like stickers and posters, and a steak dinner from Drug Czar John Walters. Steak dinner depends on whether the Drug Czar keeps his word, which isn't very likely.
We didn't arrest 800,000 marijuana users. That's the same lie I just talked to your colleague back there about.
Send us your email, I am a marijuana unicorn, to stash@normal.org today. Contest ends Friday, October 10th, 2008.
Don't you forget my unicorn.
Hello? Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is the largest grassroots drug law reform organization in America. So every Monday we visit with the activists in drug law reform who are fighting for our freedom. Get motivated to get it regulated. Join us in some political activism today. You can start by visiting norml.org. Well, that time is here again. The FBI has released the Uniform Crime Report for 2007. This is a report that puts together all of the different arrests from all across the country and lets us know exactly where we stand as far as arrest statistics go. And this, of course, is where we get the statistics on how many people are being arrested in the war on drugs. So joining us here to go through these statistics and parse some of the numbers is the executive director of NORML, Alan St. Pierre. Alan, welcome back to the Stash.
Good day, Russ.
All right, so let's just get right to it. What is the big number we're all waiting for? I feel like the Jerry Lewis telethon here, like we should have timpanis or something.
Well, those of us who placed bets all lost. The numbers were higher than any of us had predicted. 872,721 cannabis-related offenses. Of that, 97,583 were for sales or cultivation or conspiracy therein, meaning for the 35th year in a row, nearly 90% of the arrests were for possession only. The possession only number is 775,138, and these numbers combined constitute a 5.2% increase over last year's arrest numbers.
So these are all-time record numbers we're talking about here.
These are all-time record numbers. Pretty much sadly, from the day I was born in 1965, the numbers have done nothing but go up. I don't know what that says about my lifetime, but it has certainly been utterly consistent in my life. The numbers pretty much go up every year by 3% to as high as 6%.
That's just amazing. And we have a poster that we do at NORML that demonstrates this, a graphic that you can get out at our website. So check that out at normal.org. I'll have a link to it at stash.normal.org. And one of my favorite ad campaigns that we've done is the one that says, a pot smoker's arrested every 40 seconds and you wonder why they're paranoid. What are we up to now as far as the time goes?
Talk about an ad campaign that regrettably has to be updated every year. Now it is 37 every 37 seconds an individual is arrested. So the basic breakdowns are 2,391 arrests per day in the United States, 99.6 arrests per hour, 37 every an arrest every 37 seconds. So it is truly remarkable, and the scope and cost of arresting now approaching a million people per year.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that we continue to waste our time and our resources on this. And one of the statistics that I always look at when I get these UCRs every year is to compare, how many people were arresting for marijuana offenses, just simple possession offenses, versus how many people we arrest for rape, murder, assault, manslaughter, all of the violent crimes combined. Did you get the number from that today?
I don't have the aggregate number, but your point's very well taken that there's no doubt that the total number of marijuana arrests in the United States for 2007 far exceeded the total number of arrests in the United States for all violent crimes combined, including murder, manslaughter, forcible rape, robbery, and aggravated assault. It is remarkable how much attention the criminal justice system puts on marijuana. Another data stat that just jumped out at us this year is the fact that we've had even another higher percentage devoted to marijuana arrests as compared to all drug arrests. 47.5% of all drug arrests in the United States are, in fact, for marijuana. So nearly one out of two arrests are for marijuana. And we know from further data that 9 out of 10 of those are for possession only.
Mm. So it seems quite obvious that when the government talks about fighting this war on drugs, what they're really talking about is fighting a war on marijuana, since the other illicit drugs don't really make up that big of a percentage of the expenditures here.
That's correct. And that the number, regrettably, the number and percentage of marijuana arrests and percentage of per capita arrests keep going up higher as the arrest rates for these other, what are known as hard drugs, heroin, cocaine and their derivatives, methamphetamines, etc., that appears to be going down, while at the same time, according to government survey data, the use rates are going up. So if you're the drug czar, you would not begin with a war against cannabis consumers. You would clearly clear the deck and begin with a policy that focuses on so-called hard drugs, because after 35 years post-Nixon's rejecting the Schaefer Commission's recommendation to decriminalize marijuana, we have moved towards arresting far more people for marijuana than we do hard drugs.
I think that statistic gives lie to the idea that this war on drugs has anything to do with trying to stop drugs or trying to mitigate the harm from drugs, and a whole lot more to do with politics and budgets and people that want to look tough on crime.
Absolutely. And some of the other areas that jumped out at us this year in the data, going back to your point here regarding not really reflective of use rates, science, pharmacology, etc., a couple of interesting points. The Midwest has traditionally and is still the hotbed for cannabis-related arrests in the United States, making up a very healthy percentage of most of the country's arrests. What we find this year was even a further increase, a 13% increase over last year in marijuana sales busts. This year, 7.7% of all marijuana busts in the United States were in the Midwest. Another notable point is while the West traditionally and still has the lowest possession arrest rate, it's been hovering around 29 to 30%, it in fact went up 14% last year, a trend that a new spike in a trend that otherwise has been going downwards over the last 10 years. So maybe in the West, while it arguably has the most tolerant laws, to be sure, the data is clear, there was a 14% increase in possession arrests in the West.
Now, while this crime report just measures the arrests that happen, it doesn't make any mention specifically of how many people are imprisoned that year or jailed or anything like that. That's one of the things that our critics will bring up, is that, you know, these people aren't all, you know, going to prison. But that's not the main problem with the arrest for marijuana.
In fact, that's true, and your point's really well taken, that is it not ironic that each year around this date, between the 15th of September and usually no later than the 15th of October, the government can produce data and data sets at a regional level that tells us nearly to the person how many people were busted on marijuana. However, that same government cannot produce data on how many humanoids, how many of our brothers and sisters are in these jail cells, otherwise known as cages. And so when pushed hard on how many people are in jail or prison, there is a distinction between the two, the numbers that are generated mainly from nonprofit groups and non-government organizations like the Sentencing Project here in town in Washington, D.C., estimates between 45 and 55,000 people are in jail or prison for marijuana-only related offenses. We happen to think that that number is really low, and very conservative methodology was employed by the Sentencing Project and others to arrive at that data. Any given day, any given weekend in the United States, there could be tens of thousands of people in jail just for that weekend for what are known as shock treatment, shock incarceration treatments, where, ironically, most people in the United States do not go to jail for possessing a small amount of marijuana, but they will go to jail if they come up positive in a drug screen for marijuana in the course of their probation, the course of their plea bargaining, in the course of what is known as drug court. And so many tens of thousands of people are in jail at any one moment on what is known as shock incarceration treatment. So our estimates are here at the national office is that there's very likely between 70 and 100,000 people in jail or prison on marijuana-related charges. And to put that into some context, the government estimates is about 2.2 million people currently under lockdown in the prison and jail system in the United States. So therefore, okay, even if you split the baby between Normal's data and the Sentencing Project's, and one estimates about 60,000 people are in jail, that isn't a large percentage of 2.2 million. But to give you an idea of the zeal this country has for incarceration as compared to the rest of the world, our 60,000 people in jail for cannabis, only related offenses, constitutes nearly the entire size of all European countries, the European Union's, all of their incarcerated population for all crimes, drugs, violent crimes, etc. So, yes, marijuana makes up a small percentage of people in jail at any one moment, but obviously the numbers are way too high, and decriminalization effectively would reduce these numbers by half or more by individuals just getting a small fine, the police keeping the cannabis, the individual going their own way. So, and one other point regarding the lack of credibility when the government argues that there's no big deal to these individuals getting arrested because in their minds they're not going to jail or being incarcerated, that is the government's penultimate penalty that it can levy against individuals. When an individual gets arrested for just a small amount of marijuana almost anywhere in the United States where it's not decriminalized, which means about two-thirds of the United States, that an individual surely gets punished for getting caught with marijuana. They have to hire a lawyer. They have to go through drug testing. They often have to go through forced rehab even before they've met a jury of their peers or a judge. They can have their property and money taken away under absurdly called civil forfeiture rules. Individuals can lose their student loans. Individuals can be thrown out of Section 8 housing, the military. They can lose their ability to have a professional license, whether it's a lawyer, doctor, tugboat captain, or beautician. So one of the areas that reformers really need to let the public know about and to really confront our opponents is that in today's world, punishment does not necessarily equal being incarcerated. If the government reaches into my pocket and takes money out in the form of a fine and takes my urine and judges me on it, takes my property and can take away all kinds of other social benefits, including my driver's license, I feel like I'm being punished by any definition of the word. So your point's very well taken here that arrests do not equal incarceration, and incarceration does not necessarily negate punishment.
Mm.
It's a number that just keeps going up and up, and it doesn't seem to have mattered, you know, whether we've had Republican or Democratic administrations over these years. In fact, you know, we saw during Bill Clinton's administration the number of arrests triple. What can we do? What, as reformers, what are the people listening to the podcast, what can we do to maybe next year have this be the first year where the number actually goes down?
Wow, that would be blessed. Well, there's a number of things that people can do, and because these arrests occur, 98% of these arrests occur at the local level. So even though we're working all very hard at the national level to change congressional law, which would certainly set the tone for the states, it's hard to argue rightly which comes first in this chicken and egg game, changing laws at the local level or changing laws at the national level. Clearly, from Normal's point of view, after 38 years of advocacy, is that the law is where you live. Change the law locally, and those laws and those changing mores and values towards the tolerance of cannabis bubble up into the system. So from our point of view, there could never be enough local initiatives or state initiatives that will move in this direction. This election period, Massachusetts, my home state, will have a chance to move towards decriminalization. Michigan voters will get a chance to move towards medical marijuana. So clearly, most of the reform happens at the local and state level, but that does not mean that individuals should let the federal officials off the hook. Stay on your elected representative and two senators to change federal laws, because there's no doubt if the federal laws change, it makes it much easier for local and state laws to change. But where the rubber meets the road, if somebody has $1 to invest and hours of time to give, give it to your local Normal chapter or other like-minded initiative.
Excellent. We'll have to leave on that one. Alan St. Pierre, you're the executive director of Normal. And just on a side note, I told you it'd be closer to 900,000.
Yeah, you're right. I'll go to Vegas anytime with you on the upside.
All right. Thank you for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks, Russ.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Welcome to a new week and a bluesy blue Monday, Stashers. Today we get some old-timey uplifting blues with the Phantom Blues Band and their song, I'm Looking for a Miracle. It feels like laying down at the blues altar and praying for redemption. The Phantom Blues Band first came together as a studio band to back Taj Mahal on his studio CD, Dancing the Blues, released in 1993. The association with Taj Mahal produced more recordings, including some Grammy winners for this seven-piece Texas blues band. They have played major blues and jazz festivals in Europe, Japan, and Australia, and released their first CD, limited edition, in 2003. As part of the Texas blues community, the Phantom Blues Band has backed and recorded with blues greats Stevie Ray Vaughan, B.B. King, Jimmy Reed, Buddy Guy, and Otis Rush. The band continues to work on their own and occasionally does special shows with Taj Mahal. Some people say that getting cannabis legalized would take a miracle. Well, we're looking for a miracle, and as a community, we're making it happen. You can visit the band's website, phantombluesband.com, for more great blues music, and also visit our blog at stash.normal.org, where we have an MP3 download of this tune. It's the Phantom Blues Band with I'm Looking for a Miracle.
Hey, 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 hey. I'm looking for a miracle. Oh, I'm looking for a miracle. Oh, I'm looking for a miracle. And I know it's just a matter of time. Now listen to me, doctor. The vendor says must have seen a miracle time and time again. Now if I could leave a number on the next one that you see, if it ain't too much trouble, could you get in touch with me? Because I'm looking for a miracle. Oh, I'm looking for a miracle. Oh, I'm looking for a miracle. And I know it's just a matter of time. Now listen to me, Reverend, all the praying that you do. Why, surely you've been favored with a miracle or two. I'm a stranger to the church, I'm a little lamb astray. But if you show me a miracle, why, I'll be here every day. Because I'm looking for a miracle. Oh, I'm looking for a miracle. Oh, I'm looking for a miracle. And I know it's just a matter of time.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, known as NORML, has worked for over 30 years to change the misguided cannabis prohibition that has been a scourge to the public health and safety of our nation. NORML's efforts are highlighted by frequent legal and legislative success, creating the growing dialogue with elected officials and law enforcement. For more information about marijuana and to find out what you can do to help end prohibition, contact the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws at NORML.org or toll free at 888-67-NORML.
So please, give him a big hand, Radical Russ.
Hey, how y'all you doing? Happy Hemp Fest, everybody. Glad to see you all here. Hey, look, man, my name's Radical Russ Belleville. I'm the Associate Director of Oregon NORML. I'm the Political Director of the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. I have a talk radio show on XM Satellite called The Russ Belleville Show. I have my own computer consulting business, and I'm the podcaster for NORML. So much for a motivational syndrome. I never worked harder in my life and got paid less. I gave up a big IT career to be here. Why? Because they wanted to drug test me for the big job I was going to get. Six figures, big house, nice car, a theme song on a sitcom, who knows? But at the time I was shaving my head because it's kind of going away. And so they couldn't, they were going to do a hair test. They couldn't take it off of my head. And so I'm like, hey, cool, man. I mean, you buy this hair test right on. And they said, no, we got a way of
getting this hair off you. I'm like, oh my God, what? I had to go into an office and have a woman with a single-bladed razor shave my chest and armpit hair for this job. And that was the moment where I said, screw this. This is ridiculous. I'm an American citizen. I deserve the right to work. And if I want to go home and have some marijuana instead of a martini, I should still be able to work. So I want you to think about something here and about what you have to do with this whole movement here. I've got 5 minutes to speak here. In the 5 minutes that I'm speaking, 7 people will be arrested for marijuana in this country. 7 marijuana arrests in the 5 minutes that I'm here speaking to you. And a lot of times the drugs are, I do the podcast for Normal, right? I'm out at stash.normal.org. If you want to get the news and information of what's happening in the community, check it out at normal.org. And I interview people. I do all these stories day after day after day after day. And what I find is that there's so many people that are misinformed about this issue, especially this year, how we're talking about industrial hemp here at the Seattle Hemp Fest. I hear drug warriors all the time say, we can't legalize industrial hemp. If we were to do that, we'd have no way of being able to detect it. As we fly our helicopters, we wouldn't be able to tell the difference between hemp and marijuana. And I say, try smoking either one of them. You'll figure out the difference. Because hemp is not a drug, people. Hemp is not a drug. We've got a country where the Drug Enforcement Administration is in charge of banning something that's not a drug. I thought that was kind of weird until I started thinking that, well, we have a defense department that often goes on the offense, and we have an interior department that takes care of the outdoors, so I guess it's not too weird, right? But I want you all to get involved in this movement because it's all just these little things you can do that make a difference. And part of it is changing the minds of people, changing the hearts and minds. For so many years, people have been inculcated in this idea that marijuana is this demon reefer, this terrible, dangerous drug that'll lead to heroin. We need to be the ones that educate our family and friends. And don't stand up for all these reefer madness lies that people bring out. You know, I go these places all the time and hear these stupid, ridiculous things from the drug czar. And I just have to tell them, marijuana's never killed anybody, hemp is not a drug. I have to keep saying it over and over. But you can do that too. You can influence the people that are around you. Part of what we're doing in Oregon, just to give you a little heads up, is we got a thing called the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. We are going to tax and regulate the sales of marijuana in liquor stores to adults over 21. You want a party, you can go in, get some Bacardi, get yourself a bud, have yourself a great weekend, and we'll check IDs. That's the biggest thing. There are 1 million teenage marijuana dealers in this country. Nobody's checking any IDs in this situation. If you want to protect kids, you regulate it, you tax it. But we're not going to tax and regulate it for people who want to grow their own. If you want to grow your own, it's your own business, it's your own privacy, no license, no registration, no fee, no tax. And we will completely legalize industrial hemp. No, it's regular old crop. You can grow hemp, and we can take all those farms that are going down in Oregon. We can take all those timber jobs with the timber money going away. They can make hemp press board. There's just so many ways that this can make a difference. Last thing I want to tell you is that the way you can make a difference is by calling your Congress. If you got a cell phone, program this number. You ready? This is your Congress. Get your cell phones out. Come on, cell phone. It's 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. That's your Congress. They'll just ask your zip code. They'll send you right through to your representative. Tell them to support H.R. 5843 that would end federal penalties for marijuana possession. 202-224-3121. I'll be down at the Oregon Normal booth on the far side, out in the south side. Thank you all for coming out here to Hemp Fest.
God damn it! Give it up for Radical Russ there. Come on. Yeah. Come on.
What they set up for her was a controlled drug buy. They put her as an undercover guy wearing a wire, right? So she's undercover wearing a wire. She's got no training in this kind of stuff. They give her $13,000 in cash.
Hello.
Send her to these two drug dealers who have known felony records, violent guys that she'd never met before in her life. $13,000 to go buy 1,500 ecstasy pills, 2 ounces of cocaine, and a handgun. They send this 23-year-old college student who basically does a little weed with her friends, doesn't do any hard drugs, never met these guys before in her life, has no training in undercover operations, to go with $13,000, 1,500 ecstasy pills, 2 ounces of cocaine, and a handgun. And the police say, don't worry, we got you covered. We can hear the wire, we'll keep watching you, everything will be okay. Well, guess what? Everything was not okay. She goes out to make the controlled buy. The two drug dealers, you think they might have figured out something was up. You think when the 23-year-old girl, the girl next door, you know, sweet, fresh-faced girl they've never met before, all of a sudden, out of the blue, out of nowhere, 13 grand, 1,500 ecstasy pills, 2 ounces of coke, and a handgun? Yeah, they figured it out all right. They took her away from the controlled buy, they led her down an old country road in Florida, and they shot her in the back of the head. Shot her in the back of the head. Here's where it gets worse. The cops lost track of her for 36 hours. And that's how she died. So that's why I do this, and I want to thank you all for coming out to HempFest. And remember, people like Rachel Morningstar Hoffman, the real victims of this war on drugs, it's got to end now. We are the generation that's going to do it. Peace out. Radical Russ out. Thank you so much. Russ, thank you so much, and thank you for talking about Rachel. I did know about her, but I didn't know the whole story. We also lost Tim Guerin locally, who was denied a liver transplant last April. He died as well because he's a medical marijuana patient.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. I'll leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes. This one's some reefer madness from Bill Bennett, the former drug czar under George H.W. Bush, who said, quote,
"Marijuana causes people to lose their memory and lose their energy, and it makes them stupid. It is the last thing that one would want to see happen on or around a university or state capital. And people who are casual about drugs ought to realize that a lot of people are dying in America."
End quote. Man, I was going to say something about that, but I forgot about it. And gosh, I'm just so tired right now, and I can't really think of the right words to say. Aw, to heck with it. Bill Bennett, you're full of it. Go back to the blackjack table and lose another $1 million, will you? I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here for the podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.